Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I'm happy to be joined now by Vishan Chakrabarty, director of Columbia University's Center for Urban Real Estate. His new book is A Country of Cities, A Manifesto for Urban America. He makes no apology for his love of cities. They are the cure to our energy, education, economic, and health problems, as he sees it, and he sees a country of trains, towers, and trees as our inevitable future. Vishan Chakrabarty, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be here.
One surprising stat at the heart of your book: American cities are growing faster than the suburbs right now, and for the first time since the 1920s. Why?
That's right. And I think it's largely driven by young people who, you know, historically you'd think about young people, they get together, they get married, they have a family, and then they move to the suburbs. That doesn't seem to be the trend. Even in our own city, if you think about what's happened in Brooklyn, people want to stay, they want to figure out how to have better public school systems, better parks, but it's happening nationwide. The other factor are empty nesters who are moving back to cities.
Because it's isolating to live in the suburbs if you're by yourself or you don't have kids. There's stuff to do in the city. So this is an actual trend.
It is an actual trend. Of course, the other thing is we've had a lot of shocks in energy prices in the last, you know, 10 years, and shocks in home prices. And so I think people are starting to say if they can live a more compact lifestyle that's more about mass transit than auto dependency, that makes a big difference for
in
people.
In fact, I noticed that early on in the book you offer a definition of city, and your metric has everything to do with mass transit.
Right. Right. It is, because it's not just about cities for city's sakes or big skyscrapers in the desert. It's really about the synergy between density, which is a very wonky term that city planners use in terms of how intensely we use land, and the availability for passengers for mass transit, really. And that's what makes the two work together.
And Mayor Bloomberg has been very into that, encouraging through zoning development of high-rises around subway stations.
That's right.
Even Tom Suozzi, the former Nassau County executive, was trying to do that around Long Island Railroad stations.
Yes.
I don't think that got very far, but that's an urban notion.
Right, and I think actually Tom's notion is a very smart one for our region, because if you look at Long Island or you look at New Jersey, the only places really left to develop land are around the train stations, which historically have been like not the greatest places.
But by this measure, does this mean Los Angeles doesn't qualify as a city?
No, Los Angeles actually, and Mayor Villaraigosa has done a tremendous amount to try to encourage density around subway stations and subway expansion. And the other interesting thing is we like to pick on Los Angeles, but actually the boroughs outside of Manhattan are less dense than Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles. And so LA is also densifying. It's happening nationwide.
You're right that the suburbs are largely a creation of big government and explicitly policy-driven, subsidized big government, a scheme. You use the word scheme that has guided how we live, work, and play. And yet I'll bet most people who live in the suburbs feel exactly the opposite, that they're getting away from centralization to an individualized lifestyle.
Right. And all the power to them. I mean, a lot of people view the book as anti-suburban, and it really isn't anti-suburban. All I'm saying is that if you do the research, the largest subsidies in the federal system are really about encouraging people into single-family homes and into cars. And all I'm saying is if people want to live in the suburbs, they should. It should be a free choice, but we shouldn't pay them to do it. And that's the critical.
What are those subsidies other than the interstate highway system?
The interstate highway system, certainly, and the money we put into the highway system is far, far outstrips what we put into mass transit and so forth. But in addition, the biggest one in the system is the mortgage interest deduction, which, of course, you can use if you're a condo buyer in the city, but most of the mortgage interest deduction is used for single-family home ownership. It's mainly used by middle- and upper-income people to buy larger homes. And on both sides of the political spectrum, people have really started to question the mortgage interest deduction as whether it's sound policy or not. And the last interesting thing I'd just say about it is that we've looked at other countries that do not have that deduction, and there's no drop in home ownership rate.
I love your stretch on the way cities and suburbs are reflected in pop culture. The suburban dream of It's a Wonderful Life or The Cosby Show versus dystopian cityscapes of Blade Runner and things like that. And you don't get dystopian visions of the suburbs until more recently, American Beauty.
Right.
And even though you don't mention it, we were talking earlier about James Gandolfini and The Sopranos, which could be seen on one level as a show about dystopian suburbia.
I agree. I think it could be. But it is interesting. I mean, the first dystopian movie I could really find about the suburbs was The Stepford Wives, which is an incredibly searing critique of suburbanization. But what I found so fascinating is in this brief period between 1945 and 1950, a huge number of movies were produced that really encouraged Americans to move out in the suburbs. If you looked at the movies in the 1930s, like the Cary Grant movies, they were very different. And so it really was pop culture working in synchronous with government policy.
And you even go – and by the way, I see we're getting a couple of calls. We don't have much time, but if anybody – we'll see if we can sneak in one or two. If you want to react to any of this at 212-433-WNYC-433-9692 with Vishan Chakrabarty, who's the director of Columbia University's Center for Urban Real Estate and the author now of A Country of Cities, A Manifesto for Urban America. Going even beyond the suburbs – to the country life, you excoriate, of all people, Henry David Thoreau, his vision of a virgin forest occupied by one person in a cabin. You call him a misanthrope.
Well, it's not so much that I feel that Thoreau was, but I think the vision is a misanthropic vision. And I think it's unfortunately led people to believe that by living in nature that they're acting sustainably because they can somehow see green. And that's not what green is. The fact is, I always tell my environmentalist friends that if they want to save the planet, they should take a subway to a skyscraper, not an SUV to a mountain.
And I'm sure you've heard the counterargument that Americans want space to call their own. They want a plot of land and their own car. Isn't it in the American DNA to not hand over their space and agency to a big city? Look at the history of this country, moving out and out and out.
Well, again, and the history of this country, I mean, Jefferson did set up the square mile grid in large part to do that, and there's been efforts to diffuse the population. All I'm saying is, again, if people choose to live that way, they should have that right and that choice. But we shouldn't subsidize it to the expense of our economy and our environment.
George wants to bring up a couple of movies. Hi, George.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. What you got?
Well, I was thinking that Rebel Without a Cause was certainly anti-suburban, and so was The Graduate. So what's he talking about waiting for the Stepford Wives for?
Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, I think you can look through any of these at any of these movies through different filters. It's just The Stepford Wives, I think, is very much about a family that moves to the suburbs and the sort of unwinding of a woman's life into this kind of crazy automaton life that she finds out that you have to live there. And so, but I think you're right. There are a lot of movies that talk about it in different ways.
It's not every day we get James Gandolfini and James Dean
in
the same show. Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. As long as you're on the topic of popular culture, the one that never doesn't seem to get mentioned, I'm sure somebody must have occurred to it, is the situation comedy. And the most outstanding one that my kids grew up with, Friends. I mean,
right.
These young, bright, urban people, and they have great social lives, or interesting social lives anyway. And there are just all sorts of shows like that on TV.
Even Seinfeld, before Friends, showing city life is very normal.
Right. And in fact, it's mentioned in the book that the arrival of those urban sitcoms, right, which actually celebrate life in the city, happened really in the 90s and somewhat in the early 80s. And it's interesting because they happen a lot with a drop in crime that happens in New York City and other cities. And suddenly the city is kind of rediscovered as this place that's a cool place to live, along with, I think, a youth culture that, again, was kind of looking at suburbs askance.
Alex in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
I'd just like to hear a response about the fact that the densification of cities nowadays is largely a free market-led process by the younger generation. This is pushing poor people out into the suburbs who don't have the money for things like cars and the dense lifestyle that encourages community that the poor many times rely on. How do you respond to that?
And even that idea is such an inversion of our usual notion, poor people being pushed out of the suburbs, into the suburbs, rather than trapped in the cities. Do you agree with even that statement as a fact?
I absolutely agree. And in fact, there's a great book called The Great Inversion by Alan Ehrenhardt that is about this topic. And the suburbs in the United States are getting poorer. We've, since 1960, had a 40% drop in affordable housing available to Americans in terms of housing that's a third of their income, which is the definition of affordability. And Again, I think this is because the investments that the government is making in housing in the course of the mortgage interest deduction and so forth would be much more wisely made if it invested in urban affordable housing, which, you know, the government does do, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the suburban subsidies.
Before you go, I just want to sneak in this clip of Mayor Bloomberg. This is from one of the debates in 2009 when he was running for re-election, and I was the questioner, and I asked him about what he sees as his biggest impact. Was it education? Was it what? And he said this.
The rezoning of this city will probably be the thing that has as much impact on the future of our city as the improvements in education.
And that rezoning is often controversial among progressives who see it as a giveaway to real estate. Build. But I guess you see it in a more progressive sense.
I do. And full disclosure, I worked for the Bloomberg administration in the first in the first term as the Manhattan director and managed a lot of those Manhattan rezonings. But I do see it as a positive thing when it's well planned in terms of is the infrastructure there, the schools, the parks, and the mass transit. But I think it's very – I think it's actually very ironic, Brian, that a mayor whose business legacy is a digital legacy, his primary legacy will be a physical legacy as mayor.
And that's where we have to leave it with Vishan Chakrabarty, director of Columbia University Center for Urban Real Estate. His new book is A Country of Cities, A Manifesto for Urban America. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And we see there are a lot of good comments on this already on our comments page, including some pop culture references to add to the list. So go and add to it yourself or just check out what people are writing at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.